Good morning. Can you all hear me? Is this working? All right, terrific. I'm not used to being on mic, so this is a fun experience for me. Hello, everyone. My name is Chris Moscato. I am a writer from Greeley, just a little bit south of here. I'm sure most of you know it by reputation, if not by anything else. I'm a member of the UCC church there, and in our church is working into their climate activism series. Our spiritual leaders got in touch with yours, and they invited me to come out here and talk a little bit about climate fiction as a literary art form. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to read a brief story of mine for you, and then we are going to talk about the genre of solar punk. This is an original story written for your congregation that has not been published anywhere yet, which means has not gone through quite the full round of reviews. So, and edits, thank you for your grace as I read this. In the beginning, there was a garden. I stepped aboard the monorail, shuffling into place alongside commuters, families taking their children on little outings, people running errands. Mundane, precious things. The monorail zipped through the city, stopping at one leafy building or another, public parks, libraries, community centers, gardens, lots of gardens. I watched each stop go by until finally the doors slid open outside a grand structure. I entered the hospital, signed the visitor form, and a nurse escorted me to my father's room. The benefit of growing up in the shadow of his silence was that it had become comfortable. We could sit for hours and never say a thing. So even though the nurse told me he could still hear me, even like this, I did not feel a need to sit at his bedside and confess or to share or to chat. Growing up, I may have wondered about him, his feelings, but now I was fine with things unsaid. It worked. But the quiet between us had always been unremarkable. It passed unassumingly. It was not marked by beeps, machines steadily counting the passing of each unfilled minute. I fidgeted in my seat, my father's silence suddenly deafening. After a while, I slipped outside. I breathed in clean air, felt the bright sun on my face. I took a stroll through the neighborhood, bought some lunch from a food truck. The owner was eager to tell me about his greenhouse, a modified shipping container filled with UV lights and integrated hydroponics where he grew almost everything he sold. I smiled politely. I'd seen enough of these greenhouses to last a lifetime. The city was brimming with them, stacked on top of each other, some with cutout windows revealing the growth within, others with hardly any walls at all. More people in the city were growers than nearly anything else. The city's entire food supply came from urban greenhouses, small, low impact, always changing. When my father finally awoke, he said little, but was quick to request access to the therapy garden where much of the hospital's food was grown. The garden spanned the length of the roof, catching rain and insulating the building, and whenever I visited him, I found him along a different stretch, still hooked to his machines, hands in the soil. "You always find a garden," I said. He nodded and handed me a carton of recently sprouted seedlings. I kneeled beside him and set to work, not a word passing between us. I slept in the chair at his bedside that night, the droning beep of the machines a restless lullaby. The dark hours passed one beep at a time. Beep, 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 beep. And then the beeping stopped. My father shot upright in his bed, eyes wide like a spooked horse, spittle foaming at the edge of his mouth. I leapt from my seat. I'm here," I repeated, frantically searching for the emergency call button. My father looked at me, mouth opening and closing. His breathing slowed, but his eyes remained wide, wild, hungry. "The garden," he wheezed, reaching. "The garden. There's no garden, Dad," I said, placing my hands on his shoulders, trying to ease him back into bed. He reached up and grasped my arm. "There was always a garden," he told me. His eyes locked onto mine. "It just didn't know it yet." "How did the garden not know it was a garden?" I asked, my voice barely a whisper. He leaned back in his bed, hands clutching mine, and closed his eyes. "Because it didn't have its gardeners," he told me. It was not until later, as I was going through his office, that I found a lonely filing folder, yellowed with age, the only item in an unlabeled drawer that had been locked for safekeeping. On it was written a simple notation, "For my biographer." I opened the folder and two items slid out onto the desk. I picked up the first, a faded photograph of an old shipping container that had been converted into an urban greenhouse. It was the first my father had built, the first of many. The memories came flooding back, the hours we spent quietly pruning, spraying for mildew, harvesting, distributing, networking, organizing, the community gardens, the meetups, the city council interrogations and zoning protests, the riots, the legislation, the handshakes, and tears. It had started out as something so empty, that shipping container, so void of life, so bleak. It was hard to believe anything could grow there. As I wondered what had compelled him to do it, to start this whole thing, I picked up the second item in the folder and turned it over. On it was a child's drawing. Two people, one large, one small, standing with baskets of produce in a lush, verdant garden in the middle of the city. I did not remember drawing this portrait, but my father had found it noteworthy enough to give it a title. In his chicken scratch cursive, he had scribbled, in presumably the same crayon I had used to draw it, a simple heading: "The Beginning." Thank you. So, thank you. As I mentioned, my name is Chris Moscato. What I just read for you is a brief sample of the sort of work that I do. It is a genre called solar punk, and I'm just curious. Do you guys mind if I step away from the?
No, cool, thank you.
Is anybody familiar roughly with that term? Show of hands. Some of you may or may not be. It's a relatively new genre in the literary world. Even if you haven't heard of it, you may have been familiar roughly with the aesthetics of it. You've seen Chobani yogurt commercials with green buildings and robots helping you harvest. That's solar punk. The idea of solar punk is the climate crisis is something that needs to be addressed in the arts, and it's something that needs to be addressed with an eye towards solutions. This is part of a wider range of literary arts called climate fiction, which is exploring just the climate crisis through the lens of fiction. Solar punk is unique within this, one for a slightly science fiction type perspective. We do look to the use of new technologies to help create a more sustainable and ecologically responsible future, and also because of an inherently optimistic attitude. Solar punk as a genre was born as a reaction against a very dominant trend of dystopia coming out of a lot of media arts, particularly cyberpunk, is a direct reaction against that. So the idea in a lot of we see in our media is that eventually where we're leading will end up in a terrible dystopia where the rich rule over all of us and there's neon lights and everything in grimy, dirty cities. That is what was popular. Solar punk is a reaction against that. The idea that instead we could build cities that are filled with leafy greens and solar panels, cities that work in harmony with nature, and systems that work in harmony with nature as well. This is a genre that is subversive in that it is focused on ecological justice and social justice as well. Those of you who have been paying attention may have heard the word punk in there. And specifically, the way we tend to think about this in solar punk, the kind of famous quote here is that we look at infrastructure as a form of resistance. That is what we're looking at. And that can be a daunting task, because we're not looking just at, hey, I need to plant a garden. We're looking at how we can change all of our systems, our institutions, these sorts of things. And that's daunting. It includes looking at how things like industrial extractive capitalism affects the world we live in, not just our relationship with nature, but with each other. And that's a big ask. So how do we go about changing these systems? How does a little bit of writing shared on a Sunday morning at 11 a.m. how does that fix that? To quote the famous writer Ursula Le Guin, "We live in capitalism. Its power seems inescapable. So did the divine right of kings." Some of you may have heard this quote before. No matter how big a system is, if it is unjust, it can be addressed. What I would like to do, as far as talking about how I address that in just the minutes I have up left here, because I'd like to go back to our scripture for today. And I would like to preface this by saying I am not a theologian. I'm a writer. So I'm approaching this passage or these passages as a storyteller. So if you have questions about that, please confer with your spiritual leadership team. Now, we read from Genesis 1. I'm actually going to skip just a time before to Genesis 2, verse 5. I'm taking from the NIV version. Now, no shrub had yet appeared on the earth, and no plant had yet sprung up. For the Lord God had not sent rain to the earth, and there was no one to work the ground. I find that to be a very, very interesting passage, because in my reading, that's the first time we see a reference to something not growing. Everything up to this point has been about growth and creation. It's the first time we see that something is not growing. So in Genesis 1, we get the full creation, days 1 through 7. Now we're taking a step back to look at day 5 and 6 before everything had developed. And why is it that nothing has grown yet? Where are we? We are in the place that we are going to call the Garden of Eden, but it does not yet look like a garden. This is the idea that drove my story. It is a garden that does not yet know it's a garden. And how does it not know it's a garden? Because it doesn't have its gardeners. Nothing has yet grown because it doesn't have its gardeners. Now, my understanding, again, please check with them for the confirmation on this, my understanding is that the biblical Hebrew word for the plants referred to here are cultivated crops. All right, that this is a specific form of growing that cannot happen because there is no one there to work the soil and to plant the seeds and to foster their growth. So this is a very interesting idea to me. When God is done creating on the fifth day and he looks out at Eden, does he see a garden? Does he see a paradise? Even though it is one, it does not yet resemble one. The paradise is there. It is just not yet brought into fruition. And this is the idea behind the form of writing that I do, and the idea that we can find hope in a world that is looking increasingly dystopic. In a chaotic world, it is very easy to see a lack of hope. It is very easy to expect everything to decay. But if we choose to see the world as a garden, even if it doesn't know it yet, that changes our responsibility to it greatly. If we choose to see this world as the paradise it could be, we must plant seeds. We must believe that they will grow. We have to tend for it and care for it actively and with intent. Solarpunk as a literary genre is built on the belief that every act of hope, every idea, every attempt we make will seed this garden. We don't always know which seeds will grow and which will not, but we understand that there is no chance of growth if we do not plant any seeds at all. And this is where we get to the truly punk or rebellious or subversive attitude of solarpunk. The idea that hope itself can be a radical and rebellious action in a world that seems not inclined to it. The belief that every garden can be a garden and that we are its gardeners. So thank you very much for giving your time today.